In Benjamin Bergen's book, on swearing, the book is called What the F, What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves. He includes a number of those words. He includes a number of those words, none of which we'll use here. But he also goes so far as to include sign language, ASL, and how to swear in ASL. So it's if you know somebody, it's a book you might want to share with them. But it's a part of who we are, and I think that's what we're going to find out in this discussion with Professor Benjamin Bergen. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning. Doing just fine. How are you?
Thank you. I know. Are you on the West Coast this morning? Is that right?
I am. That's right, in San Diego.
Okay. So we're taking you up kind of early here. I appreciate that. But a lot of interesting aspects to this book. Do you think that everybody has it within them, Professor, to be able to swear or to actually that everybody does it?
Well, I don't know that everyone does it out loud, but I think that there are thoughts that lead to internal swearing in pretty much everyone. I mean, these are words that were trained from very early on are taboo in certain circumstances, and some people take those messages more strongly to heart for the remainder of their lives.
Before you join me, I was mentioning this. I have a son who lives in Ireland and has had for many years. He's lived there for many years. And what you and I might cringe at, what I certainly would be removed from the broadcast for, is a part of oftentimes everyday speech for a majority of the population. They use the F word almost like it's a comma. Do sometimes, if these words are used often enough, do they just become so commonplace, so ordinary, that they don't really mean anything?
That's what the data tell us is happening right now in the United States. You know, most young Americans get a lot of their media not through radio broadcasts and television broadcasts, but from their mobile devices. And language goes directly from someone else's thumbs, uncensored, to their eyes. The consequence is that they see, in particular, the F word, but lots of other profanities very, very frequently. They might see it 100 times before breakfast. And the result is, what we see from survey data, that younger Americans from millennials on down don't find those words particularly offensive. They rate them far less offensive than slurs, for example.
You know, talk to me about slurs. Are you talking about racial slurs, in other words?
Right, yeah, racial slurs, religious, sexist, based on sexual orientation, that sort of thing. Yeah, younger Americans rate those far more offensive than either earlier generations did or than words that are taboo but related to sex or body parts, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that is interesting. You actually had a fairly, you know, I'd say a comprehensive comparison in the book, What the F, a comprehensive comparison in here about what is, the strength of offensiveness on some of these words. And obviously, some of them, you know, at the very top of the page is a slur, and it's deemed the most offensive, just all across this country. But you take a look at this, too, in other parts of the world where different things mean different things. I mean, it's an interesting takedown, Benjamin. I really feel that way.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, no, one of the fascinating things about English is how different it is both across space and across time. And when, like you said, when we look at the UK, for example, or at Ireland, or at Australia, New Zealand, India, places where English is spoken, they have a very different sense of which words are and which words aren't profanity.
Yeah, so I guess we need to be careful. We need to be educated along those lines, though. But, you know, here's something. You talk about the way things have changed here. People in North America who are 50 and older grew up thinking that this sucks is extremely vulgar. And I've said this on the air before, you know, and I'm older. I'm in that age group, but I think it's just become so commonplace that people just think that, you know, it means that this is really a drag. This is a disappointment. This is a major letdown or whatever. You know what I mean? The meaning has just changed so completely.
Each generation defines its terms for itself. These are the words that we find offensive. These are the words that we want to use to maybe shock previous generations and form our own identity. And for my generation, so it sounds like I'm just a little bit younger than you are. I'm 40. I came home saying this sucks, that sucks from the playground, and my mom was shocked. And I couldn't understand why, because I was a 7-year-old, and what's so bad about this particular word? But this is what we see over the course of time. In Shakespeare's time, the worst word that's sort of equivalent to our F word was a word swive.
And yes, of course, I read that in your book.
Over the course of generations, that's just disappeared. You wouldn't, you know, we don't walk around saying swive this and swive that. And, you know, if we project forward, we can predict with relative certainty that the words of your and my generations that were the worst words, the F word and the SH word and so on, those are going to fall out of favor as the preferred swears. And it may not even be more offensive to 2 or 3 generations from now than sucks is to my kid.
As a professor of cognitive science, are you able to teach this at the University of California in San Diego?
I can. You know, I'm very careful about it.
Well, that's my question,
yeah,
because even while we're describing this and talking about this on the radio, you can't say these things. We have to say the F word, the SH word or whatever. If you were actually doing a lecture on this in front of people who come to hear and learn about this, would you be editing the same way? I mean, I appreciate that you're doing it here. I really do. I really do, sir. But I'm just wondering about that.
Well, you know, when students take a class that addresses this topic, I make sure that they know ahead of time exactly what the content is going to be. And, you know, we treat the words objectively and scientifically, kind of like we are right now. And what I find is that even though we say the words to talk about them, right, to describe what they do and what they do to people and how they work in people's brains, the undergrads who choose to take the class, no one's required to, those who choose to take the class ultimately become inured to them. You know, the constant repetition of these words as an object of study leads them to sort of lose their power in a way. So I find that it's actually quite revealing to the processes that make the power of these words change over the course of exposure.
Yeah, you know, and you also cite some examples that I thought were kind of interesting, too, about efforts to, especially in different languages, made-up languages, like if you are watching Battlestar Galactica is one example that you use, or if you're watching Game of Thrones, they had to go out and just create new words to go into those places, words that mean absolutely nothing to you and I, but in those situations, they are deemed offensive.
That's right. And when people make up those words, they actually reveal something fascinating about our expectations about profanity. So the word on Battlestar Galactica is frack, which sounds really bad. And the reason it sounds really bad is that it follows this sound pattern that English profanity uses. They tend to be one syllable long, and they tend to have lots of consonants, especially at the end, and especially these hard stop consonants like k and p and t. You can probably think about the words that I'm thinking of.
Sure, sure.
So when people make up words, they follow this sound pattern, and that has an effect on people's ears who are English speakers. They think, oh, well, that sounds pretty vulgar.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a word, you know. I've got a friend who will say, and you can imagine what he is intending here, but shut the front door. And but I know exactly what he's intending when he says this. But I wonder sometimes, and you tell me from your research here, do you find these things when you're doing them or when you're using them, does it matter to the intensity with which you use these words? You talk about the hard sounds, the hard consonant sounds, but does it matter about the intensity that you use?
Well, of course. Now, with words in general and in profanity in particular, the words serve many, many different purposes. You know, that we usually by default think, oh, well, people use these words when they're angry or upset. But of course, when you look at the actual data, people use them mostly for other purposes, to express excitement or to be funny or to seem accessible or to seem powerful or to be informal with someone. So for all of these different functions, the way that you say the word is going to change. And, you know, George Carlin said this many years ago, but it's not the words. The words themselves, in a way, are innocent. It's the way that we use them that makes a difference. And so when we use them in different ways, we intone slightly differently. We use different pitch and different volume to convey our different purposes that we want to use them for.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think it was the chapter called Fragile Little Minds, where you recount the story of Danielle Wolfe, who was arrested after swearing in front of her kids. And I remember the situation after I read this about, you know, the kids were playing with the bread, and she asked them to simply stop squishing the blanking bread. And somebody heard that. I don't know, was she ticketed or cited, I believe, for swearing in front of her children?
She was actually arrested, yeah. So she was in a supermarket. It's unclear whether she said it to her kids or to her husband. Someone was throwing things on top of the bread in the shopping basket. You could imagine it would squish the bread.
Yes.
she said that, yeah, she was actually arrested. You know, different cities have different ordinances about the use of language. They don't usually hold up, actually, on appeal. Use of profanity is still protected speech as long as it's not being used to as hate speech or fighting words, that kind of thing. So it usually doesn't hold up on appeal, but that doesn't mean that people don't get in trouble. And, you know, these can be really upsetting and embarrassing situations, being taken away from your kids and so on.
Yeah. So tell me your thoughts on this, because you, in that same chapter, you talk about our article from Pediatrics that talks about exposure to profanity can cause direct harm to children. Exposure to profanity makes children more likely to use it. Using profanity, in turn, makes children more likely to act aggressively. Tell me your thoughts and your opinions on those three, if you can kind of lump them together, Professor.
Right. Well, I'm really concerned about this because I have a kid. I have a 2.5-year-old, and by the time he was one, he was parroting pretty much everything, as I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
And of course, the last thing we want to do is cause harm to kids. And so I dug pretty deeply into this literature, and it's clear that some things cause harm. Verbal abuse in particular, so threatening violence to a child or calling them worthless. It doesn't matter if it has profanity in it or not. Those things can cause harm. And using slurs is one way to do that, is to affect a child's well-being. And these things do actually cause harm. They cause children to demonstrate increased depression, anxiety, feelings of detachment from school. Over the course of middle school, we've seen this in correlational studies. However, there's not really any evidence for the basic tenet that particular words, profanities, cause these types of harm. They, you know, like I said earlier, they can be used in so many different ways. And the studies don't exist showing that, you know, when, say, for example, let's say you happen to be a fan of a particular football team that's doing really well this year, they happen to win a really tight game, and you let out a profanity of excitement.
Yes, okay. Yes.
No evidence that that causes any harm. Similarly, there's no evidence that there's any harm when you step on a piece of Lego late at night in bare feet.
I've done that too, yes.
Express your pain via a well-selected word. There's no evidence that those things cause harm to children.
You know, I like, and you do this a number of times, you make sure that you're separating the idea between a swear word and a slur. It's whether it's a racial or a sexual or whatever, the slur, because so many of these slurs, you don't even have to use the words, but you can. I really appreciate that. It's a great look into a pretty interesting, and at times, I'll tell you, Professor, an entertaining book, What the F? What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves. I encourage people to read it if they would like to learn more. Hey, thanks. I'm glad we finally got together here and had this chance to chat about this with you. I appreciate your making yourself available, especially with you being out on the West Coast, Professor.
Hey, so much fun. Thanks so much.
We'll talk again, I hope. Take care.
Bye. Okay, bye now.
Professor Benjamin Bergen writing, What the F? And just a interesting look. It is 25 minutes after 10 o'clock here. WCCO, good morning.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Good morning. Good morning. No, WCCO. A couple of comments on swearing. John, I happened to listen to talk radio host Sean Hannity recently. I was surprised at the language he was using on the radio, what I would call derivations of the F word. Very low class. He should have a better command of the language. See, well, this is the part, I think, that is where the mistake is made. That you assume because somebody is swearing that they don't have a very good command of the language. And this is what the professor was arguing as the opposite. The same with the study that recently showed up. Here's a text that says, what amuses me is we allow people to substitute words for profanity. And that's okay. Yeah, especially if I say, shut the front door.
I substituted those words for a profanity-laced tirade. But apparently, yes, it is surprising that that's okay. Yeah, that's no problem. I can do that. I'm fine doing that. For example, child can't use the SH word, but can say poop, and that is acceptable. So the word or the meaning of the word, so is that the word or the meaning of the word that's profanity? I think it goes back to the intonation once again, the tone, the tenor with which you utter that word, and what your intention was, which we don't always know. I mean, because as he was saying, if you were watching Hoosiers, the movie Hoosiers, and you're there at that game, you're so involved in it, and that kid makes that shot. You come out of the chair, you go, yeah. You say something before you say yeah. You like, all right. You know, the same thing when you sack somebody well back, you know, they drop him for a 14-yard loss.
Yeah, just look at any professional sporting event.
Yes.
You don't have to be a lip reader and figure out what's going on there. I mean,
yeah, no,
pretty clear.
It's obvious. It's obvious. It's obvious to me. So anyway, that's the whole give and take on it. And I don't use it on the radio. I don't know if I ever – oh, I did, yeah. There was a time when you were allowed to, actually. It was called the experimental period on radio. The FCC says since revoked that, but it was between midnight and local sunrise. And it went to community standards. So if somebody complained, then the FCC would look into it. But there was a time between midnight and local sunrise. It was called the experimental period. You could try different things. And somebody had called up. We were just answering the phone live as we did back in the day. And somebody had one go by. And it's just like, I repeated it right back to him. So anyway, it's a different story. Story from some time ago. It is 10:33. We'll take this break here, get traffic and weather, and then come back and chat with Kerry Hasha about three free things on WCCO. News Radio 830 WCCO, John Hines with you on this Friday morning. Mid-Morning Money brought to you by Bain O'Leary, Minnesota's retirement experts. When you are looking for more information, you can always go to retirewisemn.com. And I'm joined by our regular Friday morning guest, Kerry Hasha from pocketyourdollars.com. And especially on a Friday when it takes on a different tone, pocketyourdollars.com/WCCO. That's where you can find the free stuff. And Kerry, good morning on this Friday morning. How are you doing?
I am great. We'll call this Friday, this set of freebies, the Halloween edition.
The free stuff, the Halloween edition. You know what? Somebody called the newsroom the other day and said, you know, you're saying that wrong, because the newsroom was saying either Halloween or Halloween, whatever it was. So you say Halloween, is that right?
I say Halloween. This is like potato, potato. I didn't know.
Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, if this is the one thing you're calling the radio station about to complain about, you've got bigger issues. So anyway, happy National Chocolate Day, by the way.
Yum, I'm off to celebrate momentarily.
Oh, good. Let's talk a little bit here about the Halloween edition of three free things on WCCO.
Yes, and I have four today, actually.
Bonus, ding, 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 ding.
That's right. A free comic book tomorrow. It's Halloween Comic Fest 2016, and if you go into a participating comic book store, you can pick up a free title, and certainly all the titles that they have available for free are sort of a Halloween sort of theme or haunted, something like that. But, I mean, they include Archie, Marvel, DC titles, and even a My Little Pony comic book is available for free. So limit one per person, no other purchase necessary. And I have a link on my website at pocketyourdollars.com/WCCO to the store locator. So you just put in your zip code and it'll tell you which the comic book stores near you are participating. And there's a bunch around town.
Yeah, you know, it's been forever since I've been in a comic book store. I work with a couple of people who are enthusiastic comic book collectors, readers, and everything else. But I haven't done that in forever. Goodness sakes.
Back when you used to buy your baseball cards?
Yeah, exactly right. Yes, that's it. So, all right, that's one out of four. What else have we got?
a free American girl Halloween event. And I thought this was noteworthy, I just have to say, because pretty much you don't find the words American girl and free in the same sentence very often.
Yeah.
So I thought parents might like to know about this. So you can get a free American girl treat and surprise at the American Girl Doll store at the Mall of America if you come in costume. And so this is tomorrow between noon and 3 p.m. And then again on Monday night, Halloween night, between 4 and 7 p.m. Plus, they're going to be doing some giveaways, and you can win, you know, enter to win some other free stuff as well.
Yeah, now, American Girl, is that still a... I know that I think it was one of my nieces was very much into American Girl, and I don't know if it's still a thing. Is it still a big deal?
It's still a thing. I have 7 and 9 year old daughters. Yes, it is still a thing, alive and well.
Okay, good. Still a thing. Got it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's
and then Monday,
good to know. Monday.
So that is Halloween itself. Kids can get a free pancake at IHOP. This is a scary face pancake with whipped cream, strawberry cookies on top, and it's happening all day Monday between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. I mean, you certainly can get yourself a coffee or your own plate of food, but you don't have to. No coupon required and no other purchase necessary.
Okay. Well, that's good stuff all the way around. Yes. So, hey, who goes out with your daughters when it's time to go trick-or-treating? Are you the one who accompanies?
Well, I'm going to have to be this year because my husband works. And we were just having this, but we've gone to the Mall of America the last, like, 5 years.
So oh.
We've all gone as a whole family. But this year, my kids want to go outside. But it's so funny. My husband, he was born in Brazil. He's from Rio de Janeiro.
Right.
So we're having this conversation over dinner the other night where I said, now, let me re-explain the way American culture works. Really, I think it's dads that go out trick-or-treating with the kids. And as the mom, I stay home and I pass out the candy. And my husband's like, okay, I got, because, right, trick-or-treating, he didn't grow up trick-or-treating. He knows nothing. This is his first time going out. And then he's like, oh, by the way, I have to work until 7. And I was like, oh, well, forget that.
Yeah,
I'll
yeah.
go out in the cold. We'll leave a bowl on the front step.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
How does that bowl on the front steps thing work? I would imagine, I know that people do that, but I just, it just seems. It seems
you know
so.
What we're going to put? My kids are thinking of the right phrasing. So if someone has an idea, I'm open. But something like, take 2 pieces or let your own conscience bother you or something like that.
Oh, I like that. I'll tell you what, you'll ask that. You want to put a proper note with it. We'll see what our listeners will text to 81807. And if I find one or two good ones, I'll forward them to you. How does that sound?
Thanks, because we're really spending our time. How do we do this and really kind of, you know, my kids are like, can we tell them we have a spy camera? And they, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to mislead the little suckers. And so, all right, good. Okay, so you're going to go out. You're taking them out trick-or-treating. And, yeah, because by the time your husband gets home after working till 7, there's really, I mean, it's pretty much dying down by that time.
It is. Well, my kids will already be back sorting candy, trading candy. And actually, this brings me to the fourth freebie. It's a little bit of a better than a freebie. I don't know if you're familiar with this program, the Halloween Candy Buyback Program.
No.
Speaking of Halloween candy. So if you go to HalloweenCandyBuyback.com, you get all the details. But let me kind of sum it up. Participating dentists and orthodontists will buy your kids candy from them. So all parents everywhere are like turning up the radio. What is that she said? Seriously. So they offer different things varying on the location, but typically they will pay your child $1 per pound of candy. And then they take the candy and they send it overseas to troops that are stationed overseas.
Sure. Yeah, they gift box it or box it up and mail it over. That's a very nice idea. And I'll bet you have a list or a link on your website at pocketyourdollars.com/WCCO where people can find all of this information.
Exactly. I have a link to the locator where, again, you put in your zip code and it'll tell you, you know, which locations near you are accepting candy. And then the thing you'll want to do is either go onto that dentist or that orthodontist website. I looked at a bunch yesterday for details of what their specific offer is, or call them and ask, you know, what are you giving for kids that, you know, in the buyback program. And many of them are also giving away, like, free toothbrushes and that sort of thing.
Sure.
You know, the stuff they typically give you when you walk into a dentist office.
Yeah, exactly right. Yes. Yeah. That starter set of floss that we still don't know if it does anything, but which was just amazing to me. So, all right. So, cool. All of this, of course, is at pocketyourdollars.com/WCCO. If people will just check there, they can find out everything they need to know. And then in the meantime, we're going to encourage people to send a text to 81807, because Carrie is just going to leave the bowl of candy, the dish of candy to pass out on Halloween, on the front step. And you want to have a properly worded note, not something threatening or whatever,
right.
But just a properly worded note encouraging them to take two and two only.
Yes, exactly.
And not reach in there and grab a whole handful.
Right.
Have somebody like Akeem Olajuwon, who's got that massive hand, come by and could scoop the entire bowl out with just one fistful.
Right. Yeah. Oops, I accidentally knocked the whole thing into my pillowcase. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, whoops, sorry. Oh, I don't know how that happened. I'm out of here. Goodbye. All right, so send a text to 81807. If you wanted to just put a dish out on your front step, how should you word the note that goes with it? I like that idea. Carrie, you have a great week. We will chat again next week. I want to remind people, too, just on any given day, just go to pocketyourdollars.com to get all the latest information that they may need. Just for on just great bargains, great deals that are out there, and some things that you can buy and get a really good deal on. So we'll have it all squared away, all covered then. All right?
Thanks, John.
Carrie, have a great week. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's your task now. Word via text. Word a note. How could you properly word a note to make sure that, well, not to make sure, you're never going to make sure, but to encourage people to only take a couple of pieces of candy when you leave it sitting out front. So 81807, send that text. Kim Johnson's going to join me next. Four things you need to know on WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hey, let's say good morning right away to Kim Johnson from WCCO Television. Kim, good morning. How are you doing this morning? Hello?
Hi, maybe it helps if I turn up the microphone. That always does a trick.
Yeah, well, it increases the likelihood.
I don't mind sitting in this room by myself just hearing my own voice, but I guess that's not the point.
Okay, no. You know, just before you were on, Carrie Hasha was on with me.
I love her.
She was talking about putting out a bowl and trying to put a cleverly worded note out for encouraging people just to take two, right? Not to go nuts.
So like the honor system?
Yes, yes. Because okay. She's going to be out with her kids trick-or-treating. She says, I leave a basket of candy on the porch. This is one text with a note. Be mindful of others. Take three and have fun. I come home to candy in the basket. That means I've got good, respectful neighbors.
That is great.
Some of them are doing some rhymes, though. Take only two, please, or I'll break your knees.
Oh.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Take two. That's fair. Take more. Beware.
Ooh.
Yes, be kind. Taking two is fine. If you take more than two pieces, we'll send scary clowns after you.
Now, do you think kids really obey those requests?
I think most kids, especially the younger kids, they're out with their parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, and you know the parents are going to make sure that they are respectful.
I would hope that they would. Yes. Yes.
I don't know. I seem to recall, you know, there was one or two, like, older boys in the neighborhood growing up who would, you know, just put their whole hand in there, grab a huge handful, and run off. So
yeah.
I think you have those, you know, you have the bad apples.
Yeah. Well, there's one text that said, smile for the camera and take two pieces and have fun.
That's cute.
Yes. Yeah, someone says,
you're being watched.
Put up a real or fake security camera facing the bowl of candy. You'd come home, the camera would be gone.
Either way, though, it's fun. And I know a lot of parents who kind of face that dilemma. You know, you want to be at home, you want to have candy and hand it out, but you also want to be out trick-or-treating with your kids. So
yeah,
what do you do? A lot of
absolutely.
People want to put a bowl out.
Say, let's talk about a couple of things here that are the four things you need to know. Chatting with Kim Johnson from WCCO Television. Joe Biden's visit.
Yes, up in Duluth today.
Yes, today he's in Duluth, yes.
Yeah, this morning. The doors opened at, about an hour ago now. He is campaigning for Hillary Clinton. at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He's also campaigning alongside U.S. Representative Rick Nolan, who, as I'm sure you guys have been talking about over there at radio, is in a very tight race once again with
yes.
Republican Stuart Mills, one of the most expensive campaigns in the country, right there in the 8th District. So they're bringing in the heavy hitters, Joe Biden himself.
Joe Biden is also in the news on his own because apparently he's being, if Hillary Clinton is elected, she would consider him as a Secretary of State.
I saw that there were two reports citing sources saying they seem to like him for the job and probably one he won't turn down. So it would be interesting. That is a very interesting development there. Also, we do have a crew heading up to Duluth, so if you'd like to check out what happened up at the rally, just make sure to tune in at 5 and 6 tonight. We'll get you up to speed.
Got it.
The other thing we're talking about, this is also campaign related, Mike Pence's campaign plane.
Yes, sliding off the runway a little bit, yes.
That would be so scary.
He's fine and everything, right?
He's fine, but he had the family on the plane. He had about 30 crew and staffers and press as well. Nobody was hurt, but apparently this plane, they're investigating what went wrong, but a long way. And there were reports of they could smell like rubber in the cabin and that sort of thing. So, it'll be interesting to see what happened there. There were reports of rainy weather beforehand. So we don't know what kind of role weather played, but certainly something the NTSB is investigating today.
All right. I'm sure there'll be more on that coming up. Probably also some World Series talk,
yeah.
Game 3. We were talking about this earlier. I've just got a half a minute here, but okay. We were talking about this earlier that in Chicago, some of the bars in Wrigleyville, all around Wrigley Field there, are doing these cover charges, $250 to come in and watch TV in their bar. But they'll also include some cocktails or beverages or whatever. Yeah, and wings and pizza, various things. One of them had $225 for a cover, but that didn't guarantee you a seat just to get in the bar. So we'll see how that all plays out. We will watch you at noon today, Kim, and I hope that you and I can connect next Monday morning here on WCCO.
That would be great. Have a good weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend. Thanks.